Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's the My First Gig Podcast. Whoa. Sharing stories of first gigs and shows. Comedians sharing their memories. The fun and entertaining, exciting and crazy. With Dwayne Dugan as your host. It's the My First Gig Podcast. Here we go.
Good evening. Good afternoon, good morning, good night. Welcome to My First Gig with me, Dwayne Dugan. Here we are, another week, another podcast. Will they ever end? They've only been back for 4 weeks after being gone for 2 years. Let's not talk about the end just yet. Let's just talk that we're here. But funny enough, this was the last podcast that was meant to happen in 2020. So this is a isolation interview. 8 weeks into the pandemic, and it's with my guest Rhys James today, so it's a bit of a strange one. I was editing this so that the files got corrupt, but I've learned that if I put the MP3s or the WAVs or whatever they are onto an SD card, put it back into my Zoom, played it through, and then put it back on my computer, guess what? It worked. So thankfully I saved everything, and then I sent Rhys an email being like, hey, how are you? I'm going to put out a podcast next week with us. We've already done it. It was 2 years ago. You've definitely forgotten about it. And you're going to be talking a lot about the pandemic. All the best. Hope you're well. So what I've decided to do, as if you are a Patreon subscriber, you get them early. You get them ad-free. And you get them extended. And I thought the extended bit can be a lot of the pandemic chat. So we have a fun conversation about what Rhys was up to. And just, it's an interesting listen to go about, you know, remembering what we were doing just to keep sane day to day, just to have anything to do. So that's what we chat about today. So when the interview kicks off, we're going to go straight in to the first general question, which is what is his first memory of comedy? So we'll join with that in a little while. It's late here. It's 20 to 2 in the morning, recording this now. But thankfully got this beautiful light that is making me look nice and fresh. Curtains provided by curtains.com. Use promo code Dwayne if you shop there. Been a busy couple of days. I was down home in Cork City in Ireland gigging last night. It was a double bill with me and my girlfriend, Fiona Frawley. She was the headliner. We met some friends for dinner beforehand, and my mate Darren made a lot of jokes about how the poster was Fiona Frawley plus guests, and how a triumphant return to my hometown led to me being advertised as plus guest. And I just think, do you know what? I'm going to get a far more mentions on Twitter. If you search on Twitter, Dwayne Dugan, it's generally just me doing my tweets. But if you search plus guests, millions, millions. So, I'm going to play around with this this week. My first gig plus guest. But the guest is me. And the guest is Rhys James. This Ramblers. This is when you can tell it's 2 o'clock in the morning. So, yeah, a couple of weeks into our new house, we now have a desk. This wasn't here last week, so do you know what? I don't have to hold the camera. I don't have to hold the microphone on a mattress that doubles up as a couch. So it's nice. Things are a bit hectic at the minute, but enjoying getting these podcasts out. Most, if not all, of the episodes in this season have already been recorded. So that's nice. And some great ones out there. But I could hope there's people starting to tour Ireland again over the next couple of months. So hopefully starting to record some episodes for season 4. there will be a season four. There won't be a 2-year gap this time. I'm going to do 12 episodes in season three. Haven't said this yet, so here we go. 12 episodes in season three, because season two ended after 8 instead of the 10. So the 12 will bring it up to 30, because it was meant to be 30 after season three. Take a break for a month or two, come back with 10 more for season four, and then it'll go back to 10 per season. Yeah, so it's fun looking back at the pandemic 2 years ago, what we were doing. Like, there was a while where you weren't allowed to leave your house, and then freedom was you're allowed to walk by yourself doing nothing 2 kilometers from your house. In the UK, I think it was different. So if you're listening in the UK or even further abroad, like, I don't think they realize how strict Ireland was. We were like in the top whatever percent of like strictest countries in the world, and we weren't in the top countries of like low rate spread. So it was very frustrating. Like, we didn't get shows back. I've spoken about this before. We didn't get shows back to earlier this year. We had about 2 months, not even 2 months, 6 weeks in 2021, when a lot of people came back in the UK in like the summer of 2021. We didn't really come back till about 6 months ago. So it's weird now that we're back. It's so great though, but like, because you don't even remember that we were gone for so long. But we were, you know, we were so just like trapped in that life of literally going nowhere, seeing nothing. Going to the shops was the exciting thing. And I remember like meeting friends for like beers in the streets of Dublin. And that was illegal. And like, it wasn't drinking on the streets that was legal. It was being with a mate. So it was kind of nice though. I like the, I like being a bit of a criminal, you know. Because I'm not really a criminal. I play by the rules, okay. I cross the road when the green man tells me to. All right? That's the only rule I actually follow. Or the only rule I can think of at the top of my head. I'm not a rule breaker, do you know? So, being illegal. So I used to travel up and down between Cork and Dublin all the time to see Fiona, because we were living together during the pandemic. And that was illegal. So, do you know what? They say a girl loves a bad boy. Well, that's what kept her. You know, long distance is hard. Not when you get old Dwayne Crim Man. My God. What am I talking about? I don't know. Thanks for listening anyway. This is getting strange. I'm gonna crack on and just do the plugs and pop into the interview. If you're listening to this on Spotify, iTunes, or any of those on Wednesday or Wednesday after, why don't you get them early? Why don't you get them ad free? Why don't you get them extended? Somebody did mention to me that the Spotify ads don't show up. So when I talk about being ad free, they're like, oh, it's already ad free. But don't listen on Spotify then. You know? I don't care if you like Spotify. Spotify is for music. I love Spotify. Listen to Spotify every day, but I never use it for podcasts. And that's just out of preference, because I get to save my podcast in the podcast app. But now I'm going to say it's because I support podcasters. I don't know why my ads don't show up in Spotify. They show up elsewhere. That's confusing. A little bit alarming. But even if you don't get ads, you still want to add, you still want it early. You still want it extended. Do you want to hear about what Rhys James is getting up to? What he's doing online with his time during the pandemic? Yeah, I think you do. Head on over to patreon.com/myfirstgigpod. And for just €1 a month, you can support the pod. For €5 a month, you can be sound. Because look, it's €5 a month. Come on. All these other places charge you 15 quid. 5 quid. All right. Bonus episodes are going to start the week after next. Bonus episode is going to feature Irish podcasts telling their Irish comedians telling me about their first gig. And yeah, I'm not sure who my guests are going to be, but I'm going to start them very soon. I need to get up off me hole and do those. If you don't want to spend any money but you do enjoy it, then just give a little shout out online. Just tell people to follow at My First Gig Pod, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and the likes. If you really love me, then go follow me at Dwayne Dugan. But if you're just here for Rhys James, then let's just crack on with Rhys James, okay? As I said, we're going to join in progress. The opening ramble is exclusive to Patreon, but we are going to join in progress the chat when I ask Rhys what's his first memories of comedy, whatever they may be, however he interprets the word comedy, And we're gonna kick off with that. So sit back, relax, listen to my first gig with me, Dwayne Dugan, and my guest today, Rhys James.
First memory of comedy in general. I mean, probably almost this won't be the first time, but the youngest thing was probably my dad used to always have the Monty Python albums in the car when we'd go on long journeys, and he'd always play these Monty Python, like of all the songs they would have in Monty Python's various films and sketch show. And they were massively inappropriate for me being maybe 10, 9. And I remember it was like a classic sitcom-y parents thing of, you know, these songs, these Monty Python songs would be on about like penises. There was like the penis song was one of them. And there's some, by the way, that are a little bit racist, actually. There's this one about called I Like Chinese that is absolutely unacceptable. And these songs would come on, and then my mum would hit my dad in the car and be like, Michael, which is his name. She's not a maniac. She'd be like, Michael, you can't play this. And then, but we'd find it hilarious. And there was like one where it's like, he was like, I've got £50 million in my pajamas. I've got 60,000 French francs in my fridge. And when you're 9 years old, I know that Monty Python are known for being funny, but when you're 9 years old, there's nothing funnier than that. I mean, that's the funniest thing in the world. It sounds insane. I know it's aimed at adults as well, but that I definitely remember just like losing my mind laughing at that sort of stuff. That's probably the earliest thing that I can properly remember. Also remember on a school trip once, a school trip where we did like a week away in a place called Tantroid in Wales, where we camped. There was this talent show at the end of it, and a boy called John Richardson, not that one, decided he wanted to do stand-up comedy, and we would have been about 10 then, and he was telling just like old joke book jokes. And he wasn't really in our friendship group, but I remember him getting up on stage and like the jockiest jock of the school, like turning around to all the people where I was sat and said, what he's about to do is really brave. So make sure that you laugh, even if it's not funny. And it was so not in character and not in keeping with what every film and TV drama will tell you about the jock type character. I just didn't really understand that logic. And that man is my friend, and he has come to watch me do gigs and sat stony faced silent throughout them. So, I mean, it's fucking bullshit that he was so generous as a 10-year-old. And then suddenly, well, yeah, it's now he thinks it's not brave if you're an adult. It's just delusional, I guess. But those are my earliest ones, I think. So my first stand-up gig was watching a fellow pupil deliver dad jokes in a talent show. And he did smash it, to be fair to him. So there you go.
Did you enter the talent show yourself?
I don't think so. Oh, actually, I remember I ended up on stage. There was like a group of my mates wanted to sing some song or something, which is just like, it was like one of those songs that just got sung the whole week. It was kind of a personal joke. I don't think I was really involved in the joke, but I do remember ending up on stage desperately trying to be involved in the moment and kind of like in the background singing along, but not really knowing the words to this song with all these guys who like, it wasn't really... It was one of those things of like, oh, these kids are just kind of hijacking this talent. They weren't really doing it for the talent. They were just like, oh, there's a stage. We can sing this song that we've been doing as a joke that no one else cares about. So I was on stage in the, you know, I was in the chorus of that, but just because I was desperately clinging on to any semblance of friendship.
And possibly even just, you know, that little bit of attention that
absolutely,
might just come in handy later on.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. So like, when do you... Do you go see any live comedy before you decide to start doing it, or do you only start like, you know, in comedy clubs or whatever?
Well, I went to see touring comics. So I started quite young. So I did my first gig when I was 17. So I couldn't really go to comedy clubs because they're pretty much all in pubs, or they just like have a bouncer or something. So I didn't really do that. I definitely went to see touring shows when I was in my teenage years. I went to see Milton Jones with my dad. He got tickets as a Christmas present, and I went with him to see Milton Jones. And I went to see Ross Noble when I was like 14. It was like quite local, and I organized a trip of like 10 of my mates to go and see Ross Noble. And definitely loads of them hadn't heard of Ross Noble. Like he was big, but he wasn't like, you know, proper household name. Everyone knows this man yet. So we went to see Ross Noble. And Ross Noble and Milton Jones, two very different comedians. And I remember at Milton Jones's gig just being really excited by the fact that I knew who the opener was. It was Chris Martin. And I just was so buzzing. I was like, I know who this is, because I was obsessed with comedy by that point. I don't think I'd done a gig yet. I was probably 16, but I'd sort of knew I want to get into stand-up. So I'd done all my research and I listened to everyone's podcast. And this is back in the day when a podcast is quite a weird thing to have. Not like now when we all have them, Dwayne. You and I both.
Too many of them.
Exactly. Too many of
them. Turn this off right now.
Yeah, good point, actually. Let's get rid of them. But yeah, so I just knew him from his podcast with Carl Donnelly, and I'd watched some of his clips on YouTube, and it was just really exciting that I knew the opener. And then beyond that, there was one gig I went to at the Good Ship in Kilburn, which is no longer there. Well, the venue's still there, but the gig's not there anymore. It was called the Porthole Comedy Club. And I remember that Jack Whitehall was doing an Edinburgh preview, and I didn't really have a concept of what that was. I was just about to try and do comedy, I think. Or maybe I had done a gig by that point. It was either like the week I did my first gig just after, or it was like the week before. But I emailed in advance to the promoter to say, me and my mates are 17. Can we still come? And he said, yeah, just don't tell anyone you're 17. It's not, he was like, it's pretty low key. No one's going to bounce you, but just keep it quiet. And then we got there and I wanted to watch Jack Whitehall do this Edinburgh preview, and Doc Brown was on, and maybe I'd seen him before and I thought he was great. He hadn't done any telly yet, but I just knew he was great. And then we went to watch those two there. And within about 10 seconds, he was there was only about 10 people in the audience. And this guy who was the promoter was comparing it. And he said, what's your name? And I said, Rhys. And he said, oh, you're that 17-year-old that I told to not tell anyone he's 17. And I was like, oh, good. Well, that's handy. But then obviously the venue were just like, yeah, whatever. There's 10 people. We're not going to kick out five of you. So we just got through it and watched that. And it's quite a weird gig to see. Like, the first time you're in an actual comedy club environment is an hour-long Edinburgh preview and someone else doing new stuff when you're half the audience. But I don't know, it was quite useful given that that is what so much of it is. You know, it was at least like an honest reflection of what I was about to step into.
Yeah, and it's nice being able to picture that. I spent a year in London and I lived on the Kilburn High Road, and when I heard that the Good Ship was there, I was very excited, went up.
Exactly,
and
it was actually
it was Edinburgh previews as well. I saw... So Fern Brady's Edinburgh preview, it was like 1 p.m. on a Sunday. And then I think like a week or two later, they upped and moved to Camden. And I was like, that's a good sign then for the local area. Yeah. But...
Well, I lived there as well. So I lived there for like 3 years, not on the Kilburn High Road, but just off it, technically in Willesden Green, but it's basically just up that road and then a left. And so I would always... When Ben Vanderveld was running it, he would often call. I lived with a comedian called Adam Hess. He would often call one of us if someone dropped out last minute and say, shit, can you run down to the Good Ship and just do new stuff because no one's here? And I think Adam did it a few times, but pretty much every time he phoned me, I was just like, true to form, I was just like, oh, no, I can't because I hate it.
So you're saying you're obsessed with comedy, you know, you go see Milton Jones, you know, the opener, you know, you're searching out these local comedy clubs. At what point do you stop being a fan of comedy as you're kind of getting older in these teenage years and thinking, I might actually go do this myself?
So there's there's a couple of things that led to that. So the first one is I ran for head boy of my school in sixth form purely because I wanted to do the speech. So I didn't want the job. It wasn't really a job, was it, being head boy? But I just did it because I knew you get to stand in front of all of the sixth form and deliver a speech, and you know, I've got a captive audience and they're exactly my demographic, so surely I can make this funny. So I just wrote a funny speech. That's all I cared about, was writing a funny speech. It was a funny speech. It was definitely really funny. What was embarrassing about it is I was so nervous that I did it in someone else's accent, and that's awkward because everyone in that room had known me for 10 years. So everyone knew that I spoke like this. But when I stood up, I was basically went, hello, mates. I want to run for your head boy, because I was really into Russell Brand at the time. I thought Russell Brand was so exciting. He was pretty new. He'd like presenting Big Brother or whatever. And I just sort of like, just instinctively, my voice just went to, here's the reasons I'll be a good head boy at his school. And then afterwards, everyone was like, that was really funny. What was that voice about? Was that? And I was just like, I was just parodying. And then I would just sort of tail off. And people would just be like, oh, okay. I didn't win head boy. It went to someone who did a very earnest and genuine speech, who made actual promises. And that person was John Richardson, who had done stand-up. at that school trip just 10 years ago. So that's
all that prep that he had, isn't it?
Exactly. He was over the nerves. He'd already done his first gig. He was fine with it. But I got the buzz from those laughs that I got for that speech. I was like, oh my God, that was so exciting. And it was also one of those things where like someone who, you know, I did a lot of like plays and like drama things when I was younger, much younger than that. But getting a laugh when you're reading a script, you're sort of taught to pause by a director. Whereas when you've just written the speech and you're not sure you're going to get laughs, what would happen is like I said my opening line, got a big laugh, but I didn't stop speaking because I was so nervous. So it was just like got the big laugh, and then just immediately I was like just speaking much louder over the laugh to try and make them stop laughing, because I was just like, just go and finish it. Which obviously is the opposite of what you're supposed to do as a comedian. But that, pretty soon after that, I knew I wanted to do comedy. I was just obsessed with comedy, and I'd been writing little jokes down, really Jimmy Carr style jokes, obviously nowhere near the level of what Jimmy Carr was doing, but jokes that sort of structure from Jimmy Carr's first couple of DVDs, and which I just watched over and over again when I was starting out. I'd written a few down and I'd like say them to my parents occasionally, but a lot of them were quite filthy because they were trying to be Jimmy Carr. And then I emailed this venue called the Hat Factory in Luton, and they did an open mic thing. And so I said, Luton was like 10 minutes drive away from the town I lived in. So I just emailed them saying, oh, I'm a teenager, but I want to try a stand-up comedy. Can I come and do your comedy night or your open mic night? And they said, oh, it doesn't exist anymore. It's gone. Sorry. And then about 6 months later, and that was before I did the head boy speech. And about 6 months later, some guy emailed me saying, do you want to come and we're doing an open mic night again. Do you want to come and do stand up still? Because we could put you on the bill. And you know, when you send that first email asking to do it, you never really expect it to happen anyway. So you're just sort of doing it like, well, at least I sent the email and now I'll never think about that again and I'll never do it. It was just like one of those things, like hope they don't reply in the back of my mind. But then because he emailed me saying, oh, do you want to come and do it? I actually remember. And also this ages that moment. I was on the family computer, this in the hallway. And my mum, I showed her the email. And then I remember showing her. I was like, oh, do you want to come and do this gig? And I said to her, well, I guess I've got to stop making excuses and just do it. And then she said, you're 17. So you've not been making excuses. You're not allowed to do this. And then, but she was like, yeah, cool. Okay. It's up to you. Go and do it. So then that was what it was that prompted it. I was like, just because that guy emailed me saying, do you want to do it? It was just basically, I was like, if I say no now, I'll probably never do it. But I kind of have to do this now because it's, you know, landed on my lap.
And like, because I guess you'd send that first email and then you got the replies and it didn't exist. I guess that time passed and you were like, well, that's, you know, I've done my part kind of thing. Or was it a case of like, I'm assuming that maybe somewhere down the line you might have stumbled onto it again. But if it wasn't for that email, you'd stopped at least at that moment kind of pursuing it, had you?
I think I probably had such a privileged upbringing that, and not a lot, I didn't go to private school or anything like that. I just had, it was just like every door was open to me from the start. So it was always I'm of the generation of you can do whatever you set your mind to, bollocks. And I come from a socioeconomic background where that is true. So I remember that I just had in my head, I will be a comedian. So it was just from the moment I decided, oh God, I love watching these comedians. This is great. I just thought, well, I'll do that. I will be that eventually. But pretty much, and this is why I wanted to go and watch Jack Whitehall, pretty much every comedian that was famous, which when you're that age and you're not in comedy, is every comedian, because it's really hard to do the research to find out who the others are. And that's why it was so exciting to see Chris Martin open for Milton Jones. But every comedian who is on TV in your head is all the comedians, and all of them were 40. So that's why I was sort of like, I'll be a comedian eventually, but I'll just have to find something to do until then. Because you can't become a comedian until you're 40. So when people like Russell Brand, who is a bit older than Jack Whitehall, but still quite young compared to the rest of them, and then Jack Whitehall came on the scene, who was 18, it was like, oh shit, you can just do it. You can just do it now. So when I got that email, it did feel like it was just at the time Jack Whitehall, I'd heard of Jack Whitehall because he was 18 and on TV for the first time. And it was just so exciting. 18-year-old comedian on TV. And then I think I found Daniel Sloss, who was similar, maybe even younger. So it was just like, oh, right. I've got this email saying, do you want to do this gig? And I'm 17. Well, this will be me. In a year's time, I will be as famous as these people and as successful from doing three gigs, and this will be the start, and I'll go and do this one, and then that's it. It'll all blow up. Obviously, that's not the case. You then go and do a couple of gigs and realize, oh, everyone's 18. Literally, there's no gimmick to being a kid on the circuit, because everyone in these open mics is a teenager, except, you know, there's a few 35-year-olds. But so I couldn't believe how many young people were doing it and how many people sort of my school year were out there. So it was that. Yeah, it was definitely, I got the email. When I first sent the email to answer your question and they said, no, this doesn't exist anymore, I just thought, well, it doesn't matter because, you know, it's on my 40th birthday, suddenly I'm playing the Apollo. I just had in the back of my mind, that will be the case. And then the second email is the thing that made me go, oh, fuck it, why not start now?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So, yeah, so you're saying, like, you've been, like, writing down these jokes, testing them out on your parents. You've been doing the speeches for head boy in school and stuff like that. So, like, when you actually go to this open mic, I'm assuming probably, like, what, 5 minutes or something, are you very over-prepared at this stage now? Kind of, like, are you, like, right, I'm ready, I can do this?
Well, do you remember when you first started writing material, you've got no concept of time. You don't really know what 5 minutes is in speech.
Yeah.
So you go, 5 minutes, is that five jokes? I mean, what is that? And obviously it's hundreds more than five jokes, but I think they said, come to do this, there'll be loads of different things on. It's, you know, I think they said do 5 minutes. And I remember on the night, I definitely did 9 minutes. I do remember coming up going, oh, fucking, I did 9 minutes. That I was so excited that I'd done too long. Because obviously you're constantly worried it's too short. I still worry about that when I do an Edinburgh preview. Sometimes even doing a tour show, I'm like, I just suddenly get in my head. It's one of the weirdest anxieties, doing a tour show that you've done for months over and over again. You'll just get to a venue and suddenly go, fuck, what if this is suddenly 20 minutes? And so, especially because I do two sections on tour, and it's always the first section, I'm like, fuck, what if I just only got 10 minutes? I'm fucked. And then you go, I go on, and often I come off and I go, oh, that was 45 minutes. It was only supposed to be 30. I mean, what am I doing? How do I not know this yet? I've been doing this for so long. I've literally been on tour. I was on tour last night. I did the same jokes. I know how long it takes. But I definitely had that same feeling with that first one where I was like, oh God, I need loads and loads of stuff. So I just, every joke I'd ever written, I didn't even really put them in an order because it didn't look like Jimmy Carr had them in an order when you watched him. It looked like he just said one, got the laugh, and then basically moved on to the next topic, which, you know, isn't true and is not what he was doing. They were linked, a lot of them. And they're sectioned up to make sense. But as a fan, you don't notice that. Well, certainly not as a kid. So I just had random assortment. And also, I didn't really have any that connected. So I just had random assortment of one-liners. So I just went and did one-liners. And I don't know how I stretched it to 9 minutes. I think I made some comments on the gig or something like that. But I definitely remember being, yeah, you're right. I was concerned about that amount of time. They said do five. But I got there and they were pretty relaxed. It was just a bloke with a clipboard. Like, yeah, whatever you want. Do whatever you want.
Like, yeah, so what's the night look like? Is it a ton of people performing? Is there many audience members there? Is this the first time that you've been down to this place?
Yes, it was the first time I've been there, and it was a fucking disgrace. I mean, everything I'm about to describe to you sounds like a nightmare. So it's a mixed bill of mainly emo bands and teenagers in emo bands. It was a real big emo era. There was the Scene Kids is what they were called where I was. Scene, and like, it was really like everyone, like black hair kind of, it was like the MySpace era. So, you know, that high angle black hair, eyeliner, guyliner type era. And there was loads of bands like that. And I got there and there was one other comedian who had already been on by the time I arrived. So they didn't tell me when the event started. They just said, great, it's at 8:45. And they meant that's when I would be on. So I basically got there at 8:45. Obviously, luckily, everything runs behind. So I got there. I said to the guy, I was clearly so nervous. I said to the guy, has there been any other comedy? Because there was, I could see that I was like, there's three bands and then you. And he said, yeah, there was one other comedian. And he pointed at this bloke, this 38-year-old bloke. He said, there'd been one other comedian who's over there. And I said, oh, what was he? Was he good? Was he funny? And then the guy just went, he was very angry. And I was like, oh God, okay. And then, so the audience is packed. It's absolutely packed. It's not a big room, but I've been back since actually to watch a band play, but it was not a big room. It maybe sat probably 60, but everyone in this gig is sat cross-legged on the floor because they are all 15. Pretty much. I mean, everyone was like a fan of one of these, like one of their boyfriends was in an emo band or something like that, that they were there to watch. So it's just all these girls who are like 15, 16. And then there's a couple of parents sort of stood at the back, but mostly it's people sat cross-legged on the floor. The stage is just covered in like musical things. So like there's all these guitar stands and like even like music, like where music stands where they'd put note, like sheet music and lyrics, which sounds insane for a band. But also there's a massive drum kit taking up most of the stage. I got to the venue and I said to the person behind the bar, is there any chance I could put my coat? It was in the middle of winter. Can I put this my coat behind the bar? I don't want to wear it on the stage. And they were like, no. And I said, I've got to go on stage in a sec. I can't, I don't want to wear it. And they were just like, yeah, you can't put your coat behind here. And I was on my own, so I didn't want to just leave it. So I walked onto the stage when I was announced. And then I took my coat off on stage and then just rested it on the cymbals of the drum kit, which was like, in hindsight, it actually seems like sort of a baller move. Yeah. To like spend the first like 20 seconds of my set in silence as I just put my coat. So like everyone is there for an evening of music. And then I just go, fuck that, and put all my clothes on top of this, all the music, where the music happens. And then just go, now time for some jokes. But I didn't mean it to be arrogant. It was actually because... It was for the opposite reason, because I had no authority to put my coat somewhere else. I then, as I got to the stage, could see, oh, fuck, just to my right, there's a backstage. Like, there's a green room. I'm allowed to go in there and just put my stuff in there. But I couldn't tell that because the angry comedian was sat at the back of the room. So I assumed that's where all the acts had to be. But yeah, that was it. I got driven to that gig by my parents. I wouldn't let them. Both of them took me to that gig. And then I said, no, you may not come in and watch. And then they went to a pub around the corner and then just said, call me when you're out, and then got picked up and driven home afterwards. That's the... God. Oh, God. That's so lame.
Like, for that first gig, I avoided all of those, thankfully, because whenever I heard that they existed, the comedy music mixed open mics, they sound like the absolute worst places, just because...
Yeah.
I like it. They terrify me. The idea of going up there...
And I'd never do it now. Yeah.
I'm going to tell you jokes when you've come here to see... Not comedy.
I think it's purely out of naivety. I had no idea.
Yeah.
That I didn't really know that it was going to be like that. For some reason, I assumed, oh, this will be full of people like me who also want to try their hand at comedy. I think I thought it would be like that. Maybe there'll be some poets. But, you know, I thought it would be like a kind of a, at least a spoken word evening. And then I was like, I got there and then I was so naive to how this worked because I was so green and young that I just thought, well, there's no reason this wouldn't be good. We're all just trying something. There's no reason anyone wouldn't want to support my, like, even though they're clearly there for an evening of emo music, the absolute opposite of what you want is to laugh. If you're there for some emo music.
Like you're heckling every evening. Exactly.
Yeah. So it was a bit weird.
Do you remember your opening joke that night? That very first one?
I don't think I remember my opening joke. I definitely remember whatever the opening joke was. I remember after I said it, I sort of went, ew, because it was a bit of a gag, like punny gag, and just to like hammer home these are jokes. I was sort of like ew, and then everyone sort of went wee like that, which at the time I thought was encouraging. Now it would be the absolute worst reaction I could possibly get to a joke. If I now told a joke on stage and the audience went wee, I would know. Oh, that means that joke is terrible, and the audience are humouring me.
You now owe everything to that way, though. That's where it all started.
If it had been silent, that would have been dreadful, and I would have never done it, said another joke. Yeah, but the fact that there was some noise, I was like, okay, great. And then they, you know, there was a mixed bag. It was one-liners. I'd never tried any of them. And just like, you know, Milton Jones or Jimmy Carr doing new stuff, it would be a mixed bag now. So obviously doing your first ever gig with one-liners is a mixed bag. None of them are usable. I remember some of the jokes from that set. I don't remember the one I opened with. The one that sticks out clearest in my mind is this, is because this is such a Jimmy Carr joke structure, is that I used to say, fuck me, I hate this. I don't stand by this. I have to say that. I was 16 when I wrote this. It was, a dog is a man's best friend because they don't talk and you can shag them whenever you want. Only joking. They do talk in films. That was it, which is like just really copying Jimmy Carr's only joking and then twist on the thing you thought he wasn't joking about. Thing that he used to do all the time, that fake only joking, and then, you know, reveal the other side of it. And I remember when I wrote, I remember coming up with that joke and being like, oh god, great, I'm the next Jimmy Carr. This is incredible. And then going and saying it to a bunch of emo kids at this gig, and they probably did laugh. They probably thought it was funny because they were 16. They probably, you know, it would have been chuckle at most, but it would have been something. And I'm like, oh good, okay, good, I can do this. I don't really remember any of the others. I had this, I think I had this really long-winded pun about an iron being like hot and heavy. I love my iron's really hot and heavy. I'm always falling out with my iron. It's really hot and heavy. So I told it we need to straighten things out. And do you know what he replied? Shh. I remember like, it's just like so many fucking lame puns about an iron. And also like, this is the same comedian who just told you that he fucks dogs is now doing this like really sweet pun about irons. It's like, well, what are you? You haven't got a voice. What image are you presenting? What's the character here? That would have been definitely a wee rather than a laugh, I imagine.
Well, getting away from getting like the reaction of them just going way to you. You know, if there are a bunch of emo kids going to see music, that sounds far more encouraging than I guess they would be. So like, for it, all in context and for what it was, it did it go well?
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly had worse gigs than that in the last year. It was great. I mean, it felt like, I mean, if I watched it back, I would know this went terribly. Obviously, this went fucking awfully. But on the night, I came off and I was like, fuck me, that couldn't have gone better. And actually, even the other comedian who was there was like, sorry, that was your first gig. I mean, that was amazing. I mean, clearly that comedian was fucking terrible. I didn't see him, but clearly from the feedback, he was like, what? And then he was like, God, that was brilliant. And then even the promoter was like, fucking hell, well done, mate. I mean, like, every time a comedian comes here, it's normally absolutely awful. But that was all right. And I was like, okay, great. I mean, that's all you can hope for. So it definitely went well. Like in the context of the evening and it being a first gig and all that sort of stuff, it went well. In any other context, it was obviously awful. But I definitely remember like there was a big round of applause at the end. Everyone's faces in the audience, I could see because it wasn't lit like a proper gig. And I could see that everyone was very encouraging, whether they actually liked it or not. But they were teenagers. So you wouldn't, it's not like they were, you know, just being kind because it's an honest age. So they would have been going, this is shit. To each other if they really thought it was shit. So they seemed like they liked it. And then I remember, yeah, obviously came off and then absolutely buzzing. And then of course was like, right, well, I've done one now. So I'm ready to, you know, be playing stadiums, I think.
Well, it sounds like either they were very encouraging or maybe before you arrived, the MC went up and said, now look, this is very brave. No matter what happens, yeah, you must laugh.
He just went over, have you heard of the Make-A-Wish Foundation?
that's it. Like one gig down. Are you like, because I know you went to college, but like, are you now going, no, this is it. I'm going to keep doing this now.
Yeah. I went into school the next day and I had a couple of mates. So like, I was always writing stuff before that. So like I'm the sort of fucking loser who in sixth form would like to ask certain friends who was, you know, there's like people who at school are funny. But they're just funny because they like being funny. They're not desperate to be funny. So a lot of them like now just do such boring jobs because they never needed to be funny. They just liked being funny. But I always needed it so much that if they were funny and we got on and were friends, I'd be like, right, this weekend, come around to my house and let's write a sitcom. And then I'd make them come around. We'd sit there for half an hour trying to come up with characters. And then obviously they'd get bored because that is boring. And they'd be like, can we play football? Because we are young. And I'd be like, oh, but we need to get this done because we're going to be stars. So I'm the sort of person who would do that. So then I came into school the next day and I was like, told all those kind of mates. I was like, I did stand-up comedy last night. And then obviously that word got around the sixth form common room quite quickly, and people were like, what happened? And I was like, oh, I did this gig last night. It was mad. I was so nervous, but it went well. And then I had a couple of mates talk to me and be like, can we come? Can we come watch? Can we come watch? And I think maybe five gigs in, I let them come watch. And they always used to talk to me weirdly. I remember about what I should wear. So a lot of them were like, what are you going to wear? What are you going to wear tonight? Like, if I was still at school, and then I would go and have a gig that night or something, and they wouldn't be coming to it, but, you know, we'd be talking about it, and they'd always be like, oh, what are you going to wear? And I even remember my mate Cal saying, oh, you should, I had this like kind of tracky jacket that I would wear, and they weren't, people didn't really wear them where I was at the time. And he was like, you should wear that tracky jacket because no one else wears that. So you'll stand out and you'll have an original image. And I didn't do that. And it took me 8 more years of doing comedy to think I should have a more original image. I mean, I still don't have an original image, but I definitely the thought has now crossed my mind. And I spent 8 years having been given that advice 2 gigs in by a 17-year-old. I ignored it. And then later on was like, oh, fuck, yeah, quite a lot of people have a really unique image and style for this, and I really don't. And I was like, oh, I should have listened to Cal and worn a tracky jacket back in the day and just made it my thing. Now I'd be comfortable doing it. And then, I was like, pretty much after that. So what I did is I just looked up what everyone else did. So I was like, the good thing was that Jack Whitehall, going back to Jack Whitehall, he was so new when he got on TV that all his credits, like on his website, were for Amuse Moose competition, Laughing Horse competition, So You Think You're Funny, all those things. So even though he was on TV, he was famous to me. That's all it said on his website. So I was like, oh, well, this is the blueprint. This is what you have to do to get seen. And spotted. So that's how I heard of all those competitions. And so I just entered all of those. I was just like, okay, I'll just write to all of those, enter all of those. So I did all of those immediately. Like my second, third, fourth, fifth gig was those competition heats. So like a lot of people wait. So You Think You're Funny, you can only enter once apparently, I think at the time. I don't know if that's still true. At the time it was like, you can only enter it once. So loads of people were, if you mentioned it, were like, no, I'm going to wait till next year when I'm a bit better. Whereas I was so like, no, right now, right now. Come on, let's start. I want to be doing big gigs on my own. So I entered it immediately. And I remember like scraping through the heat and then obviously being fucking terrible in the Edinburgh heat when like you got through to the next round. But I just, a lot of my first gigs, a lot of my only gigs for ages, I didn't really do many open mic things before I left and went to Manchester to go to uni. So all my early stuff was just in London, was just competition heats.
Must have been very friendly when you actually start going out and doing, I guess, you know, normal gigs, should I say, like not competition style. Speaking of those early days, though, in the true, true, lovely, nostalgic spirit of those early days, any horror stories that you remember?
One major one, which is I did a gong show called Stand Up and Deliver. I want to say it's Stand Up and Deliver. And essentially it was a classic gong show, last 5 minutes or whatever. And it was like in some basement. It wasn't one of those aggressive gong shows. You know, there wasn't really a gong atmosphere. The crowd definitely went with the gong idea of holding up the cards if they didn't like you. But it wasn't like a, you know, get them off, like all these horror stories you hear about Comedy Store King Gong and all that sort of stuff. I never did that. I did this gong show. And the prize the next week was you got to come back the next time and headline and do 15 to 20 minutes. My set, when I won the gong show, was... like I did like 3 minutes, and then the rest of the set, the joke of it was I only had 3 minutes of material. I didn't expect to get this far, so I don't know how to fill this last 2 minutes, right? And then I was just like kind of improvising, kind of fake improvising occasionally. Like I'd throw in one line as I still had, as if they were just thoughts, but I still also was just improv. The last, you know, the fourth minute, I probably was improvising and just being like, oh, anyone got any fun games to play? Just as like that was the joke, as in like I thought I'd be gonged off, and then I won it. Only two of us beat the gong, and then I got chosen as like the best one. So my prize was the next week to come back and headline with 15 minutes, but I only had 4 minutes of material. So I spent that week trying to write new jokes, and like they're trying to write much more bitty things rather than one-liners. But at the time I kind of just thought that a bit was basically a one-liner, but it just took a minute to get to the punchline. So anytime I would write like a long bit, I can picture it in my like documents where I used to write this stuff. It's basically just a one punchline joke that's a paragraph rather than a sentence, because I didn't really see that actually comedians are being hilarious on the way to this joke as well. And the punchline is just one part of it. And so I had all these bits. Anyway, I went and did this gig and I got there and the standard of the Gong Show that was on before my headline set was so much higher than the week before. And it was a lot of comedians I'd heard of from, you know, getting to finals of competitions the year before and just like being way more experienced than me. And then, so they were all there and they stayed and watched me have one of the worst gigs in the history of comedy. And also I'd been bragging at school, like I'm headlining this gig. I'm already headlining. Like I've done six gigs and I'm now headlining. This is crazy. And my, you know, my Facebook status or MSN name, whatever it was probably like headlining tonight. And went into this gig. This time I did think about my image. I wore this, I had a wristband, like a bracelet-y type thing. Fuck me. I've never worn one of them in my life. I think I bought it for this gig. As I say, Russell Brand was very popular at the time. I bought it for this gig, never wore it again. And I wore a big, clean, white t-shirt that had the Jaws poster on it. and I've, at this age, by the way, I had really big, like, hair in a Russell Brand, in like a Noel Fielding way. I was like, I was really like straightened, but then like messed up hair, just looking like the biggest fucking cunt in the world. I don't know if I'm allowed to say cunt on this. Prick. There you go. Just edit that in. Biggest prick in the world. And then I went on and I opened like, hey, and then I was like, yeah, I'm going to tell you some jokes. And just like really overly confident and then just died so fucking hard, like played to, but I was no longer, so they were a Gong Show crowd, but they couldn't gong me up. And I was then dying so hard. And a few things happened that are terrible, which is one, I was like, oh, fucking hell. Yeah, this isn't going well. So then I just went, any questions? And then a guy just went, what are you going to do on your gap year? And I hadn't said I was doing a gap year or anything. I clearly just looked that age. And I was that age. And it smashed it when he said that. And I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. Okay. And then I also had seen Stuart Lee's Comedy Vehicle the week before, and he did that routine about Del Boy falling through the bar where he spends about 5 minutes lying on the floor going, it's the funniest thing in the world, Stu, he falls through the bar. And me being a fucking idiot who doesn't understand comedy thought that the joke there was that a man is on the floor. So midway through this set where I'm dying on my ass, I just lay down on the floor and then just started speaking to them from the floor about how badly it was going. And... It was fucking awful. It was obviously, it was terrible. And I got up and everyone was like, fucking hell, you did the time. So fair enough. I respect you for doing the time. And I was like, oh, really? And the promoter went, yeah, you did the time, mate. And another like 15 minutes. And I'd done like half an hour.
Wow.
when I really didn't need to, yeah. And that's me, the person who's scared of underrunning all the time, overrunning in an absolute car crash. And that, yeah, that was really early on. That was really like 5-6 gigs in. So that really dented it for a bit.
That's typical kind of naivety there when, you know, you're worried about filling 15, so you do twice as much at the time.
Yeah, and also just like just arrogance of being 17 and like I hadn't had a bad gig yet. And I was just like, oh, I just, you know, I'm just brilliant. I'm just always going to smash this. I just wrote these gags and just everything's gone well. And now I'm headlining already, which is not what that means. To headline if you win a Gong Show, that's not being a headliner at all. It's just going on last at an open mic. But that's how I interpreted it because I was just 17 and just cocky and just like, oh, I can do anything. And then just, yeah, I mean, I needed that to happen. I absolutely needed that to happen. But at the time, obviously hideous.
So, yeah, we'll turn the tables now and maybe go a bit more positive. Remind me the name of the club in Luton, that first one. Was it a hat, something hat?
The Hat Factory.
The Hat Factory. So you've arrived. You've nowhere to put your coat. There's the angry comedian. Was very angry. Tons of kids on the floor, sitting cross-legged. You're about to go on stage. If I could take you today and put yourself back there and give yourself a minute or two, what do you think you'd say to yourself looking back now?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think it would just be, I mean, to be honest, I probably said this to myself at the time. It would just be, you got to do this and you got to, it's good that you're doing it now because if you don't do it right now, you will wait another 10 years. But you can get that 10 years out of the way. So I'd just be like, if this is ripping a plaster off, just do it. It doesn't matter. You're never going to see anyone in this room again. So who cares? Just go and say what you want to say. But I would be like, maybe don't go AO so much and make sure that when you put your coat down on the drum kit, you clarify that it was purely for logistic reasons and wasn't a power play.
Well, look, that's a great place to leave it. Rhys, thank you so much for chatting about your first gig today.
Oh, thanks, mate. Thank you so much for having me.
So there we go, episode 22 in the books. Rhys James, thank you for recording that over 2 years ago and waiting so patiently in the vault. He himself was waiting in the vault, and now he can finally go home. I'm sure his girlfriend and his family are delighted to have him back. And look, I was delighted to have him for all that time. Rhys is fantastic. You've probably seen him on TV. One of the bigger, more prominent names on Mock the Week in recent years, as it just begins its final season now. Fantastic comic from the UK. He's just announced a tour called Spilt Milk, and all of those dates are on rhysjames.com or .net. I'm going to do that thing where I pretend, going, hey, edit in here. Rhys James, search it online. His tour is kicking off all over the UK next year. If you want to support this podcast, go to patreon.com/myfirstgigpod, and for a euro or a fiver, support this pod and get early episodes, ad-free episodes, and extended episodes, and bonus episodes coming soon to My First Gig. I'm Dwayne Dugan. Follow me at Dwayne Dugan. Let's just, you know, we've been here a while. As I said, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. We're just so glad to be listening. Do I need to do this big outro? Is this shortchanging people? Should I tell you about my life? I'm still sick from last week. My nose is running, my throat is sore, my head is sore. I think I broke my toe. I was on a stag and I woke up and my toe was sore. And then I came home, my toe was blue. Did I kick something? Did something kick me? Who knows? I'm not going to go to the doctor to look at my toes, though. It's just not going to happen. I've got hairy toes. Like, the toes, the hair on my toes is the beginning of the hair journey that, if I don't shave my neck, my toes, the hair goes right to my head. Is this information you want to hear? Like, you've already sat through this entire podcast. If you're on the commute now and you're going to go, right, that's that interview, I'm going to wait for my podcast app to roll to the end of this, and then I'm just going to crack on to the next podcast I have downloaded. But yet this mother flipper is chatting about the hair on his toes and how it connects to his head. Then maybe, you know, maybe you're not the listener for me. And maybe I'm not the host for you. But guess what? So many people are in loveless relationships. How about we just be another one of them? Do you know? If you're loving this, well, thank you. I don't even need to tell you how much I thank you, because we just have it, you know? We just feel it. But if you don't feel it, pretend. Or I will show you my toes. That's a good place to leave it. Before I leave it, let me tell you about next week's guest. Until I say this, I don't know who next week's guest is going to be. As I said, they have been all recorded, so I just need to go into my Rolodex and think about who's the next guest. And I've decided now, tune back next week. See, no one listens to this end bit, do they? But those who do, you get this little sneak peek. So you, shh, don't tell no one. Don't tell no one that next week, next Wednesday, or next Monday, if you're on patreon.com/myfirstgigpod, or next Tuesday, if you're on patreon.com/myfirstgigpod, but you pay the cheaper one, my guest will be none other than Mary Beth Barone. Recorded at the Paddy Power Comedy Festival in Dublin this year. Great podcast. Very funny comedian. Did a show with her and she absolutely rocked it. Was the only import on a show of Irish, and generally that's a far more kind of like Irish audience, or like Irish-leaning audiences, so it's extra hard to break through that barrier, and she did it with ease, and was fantastic, and the chat was fantastic also, so tune in next week for that. But until then, I've been Dwayne Dugan, I'll try to stay being Dwayne Dugan, and you and me will meet back here next week, and I'll see you then. Goodbye, good night, mwah. Love yous, platonically, and sexually. Does that affect my ad sales, actually? We'll see. Toodaloo.
It's the My First Gig Podcast. Whoa.
You've been listening to My First Gig with Dwayne Dugan on Acast. Follow online at My First Gig Pod or at Dwayne Dugan. For classic episodes, ad-free, early access and more, head to myfirstgigpod.com. This is My First Gig with Dwayne Dugan, powered by Acast. Enjoy.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.